You know, I'll start by saying that equity guys in general don't really appreciate the fact that they stand on the shoulders of the people that are really the entrepreneurs, really doing the work, really doing the value add, the sourcing. So I don't think that in general, the guys on the ground get enough credit for their expertise. And I'm often invited to sit on these things. And I'm probably not going to tell you guys anything you don't know about multifamily. In fact, you guys could probably tell me a lot of stuff about multifamily. So it's a weird dynamic. That said, what I think I can help you with is how to get funded by the equity guys, what the different methodologies are to get the capital from different groups, whether that be at the lowest end crowdfunding, then syndication, then a smaller syndication, then family office, smaller funds, and then larger funds. You know, I don't want to make this a monologue. Rob knows me. I'm a pretty casual guy. I love Rob. We're really close friends. You're lucky to be associated with him. I feel I do. But I'm a dialogue kind of guy, pretty casual. I assume I'm the last guy. It's Saturday night. Everybody wants to go out and get drunk. So let's start off the conversation. Let's maybe do a Q&A. Unless Rob, you want to steer me, I can tell you what we're looking at, what we like about multifamily, at least at our shop. You tell me, what do you want? How many guys are in the room? Four?
Yeah. One, two, three. Yeah, no, we've thinned out. We've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Anybody mind 12. If I smoke my Juul? It's been a hard 2 days.
So you're unique in more ways than one. But specifically with your fund, right, you're not like the fairway value add. Let me get my low mid teens and, you know, I want there to be some hair on the deal, but not too much hair. Or, you know, so kind of share your philosophy and also give people insight. We don't have to talk about too much, but a lot of people don't understand the fund business and what you actually do and how you make money, right? You have in your investors, you raise capital for your investors, and then people like myself come to you and try to raise money from you. So kind of share more about your business.
Okay, that's good. So let's break it down this way. Let's describe how guys like me make money. Who are the guys like me on a small scale and then on a large scale? And then how we make money. And then how we differ from other groups that you would raise money from. Does that sound good to everybody? I can't hear well. Just raise your hands. Good? No good? Okay. So funds are, how should I put this? We are paid to select deals and represent and have power in deals instead of your syndicated investors. So let's just say that you had a really rich guy that you're just getting all of your money on a deal from. We're that guy. So we would take the entire slug of a deal. So if you were raising $10 million, funds take all of it. So funds don't do anything that a very, very super high net worth family office couldn't do themselves. We add no value except for our intelligence to somebody that has $1 billion. There is no reason if you could do it yourself or hire somebody to go into a fund. You just go diversify. So where does a fund add value to people? A fund adds value if you have $1 million. Now, if you have $1 million, you have a choice. You could go into one of Rob's deals. He's going to charge a much higher promote to them than he would charge to me, and fairly so. It's a lot more handholding, and they don't have access. And now you're in there, and you're paying, I don't know, a 50 over a 6, a 50 over an 8, a lot of fees, deservedly so. And you guys earn every penny of it because where else are they're thrilled with an 8, or they could go buy Bitcoin and go gamble, or, you know, try to buy the S&P right now. So that's a big value enhancement, but that's not really as good for that investor. And the reason why is they have all their eggs in one basket. So let's say that you're an investor and you want exposure to opportunistic real estate. You want to just say, I want to set it and forget it, like Ron Popeil, the rotisserie, just put it in there and I want to check. But what you do by entering a fund is you have us diligence the deals, measure a portfolio so that we give you the sector. It's a lot safer. Funds don't typically lose money. And also, believe it or not, funds will typically outperform other individuals that are going into individual deals. The other thing that funds do for the investor is we have full control. And I use this example a lot. I remember a time where a guy syndicated, an unsavory guy. He syndicated a lot of money for some senior living facilities, and he wasn't really the guy. He was sort of like partnered with the sponsor. It was one of those things, you got like five sponsors in a deal. I'm sure you guys have seen that, tried to do it. And it's just a mess. You don't know who the guy is or the girl. So sure enough, there's I guess, fraud. I don't remember the details, but let's just, for the purpose of this argument, say that there was absolute fraud. Complete, deserves a lawsuit. Now you got 100 investors in there. And by the time they put their suspenders on and got a belt, it's 9 months. You got to get everybody in a room. No one knows anything. Now you got to agree on a lawyer. That's another 3 months. And now who's paying for it? Who's running for it? Disaster. We can all agree on that, right? There's just no way. I guess if you ever want to commit fraud, syndicate a deal. So now let's say, and I don't know what's going on with my cameras. Is that better? Okay. So now let's say that there's a single investor. Let's back up. That's for fraud. Can't even get your pants on for fraud. Now let's say the guy's just doing a shitty job. Forget fraud. You can't even get rid of him. Let's say the guy just can't fill the units. He's doing like these crazy premium turns in the middle of like Baton Rouge slum that makes no sense. If you can't get guys in a room for fraud, what the hell are you going to do if he's just doing a shitty job and you don't even know if he's breaching the agreement that you probably never read? So a fund, if you were to commit fraud, first of all, we're on the bank accounts. We have all major decisions, 90% of the equity. We wrote the docs. We'll know about it. And that sponsor will be on his ass faster than you guys have a drink tonight. That protects investors. So that's an extreme case. That's fraud. Now, let's say the guy's doing a bad job. Most funds got to be funds by having worked in multifamily before. So if I see some guy painting siding in the middle of Atlanta, I'm going to say, what are you out of your mind? You're going to warp the entire building. You got to be crazy. We've done this. We know a guy. Let's say that the sponsor has some problems with Arbor or with Truist. Well, they're hitting us up all the time. So we call our guys there and we end up making the deal more money because we're accretive. If you're trying to get a lender and they say, who's your LP? And you say, well, I have Blackstone, who does the exact same thing we do. They're just a lot bigger. Or I have Artemis, who's a little smaller. Then I have Torchlight, who's a little smaller. They know those guys. You're going to get more favorable terms. If you're missing something on the document or trying to negotiate a hard point, they're calling us all the time. You guys think you get taken out to lunch by the banks? I mean, I don't think I'd ever have to pay for a meal in my life if I wanted to. Guys, Rob knows I don't ever go to lunch. This is, you get coffee and that's it. And I'm home with my wife and kids. So those are some of the things that a fund brings to investors. So why would you guys ever use a fund? Sounds great, right? Oh my God, look at all this shit that they can do. Well, there's a downside to it. We're really expensive money. We are very expensive money. What does expensive money mean? When you're doing a deal, everything is basically has a cost of money. Your debt is going to be your cheapest money. And all of these things, you have to overcome all of these, let's call them interest rates or preferred returns, but a cost of that money. You have to overcome all that shit until you start getting money, right? So now, if you've got high net worth investors, and you got an 8 pref and you're completely killing them, and God bless you, it's a free country, you got to overcome a lot less. You got like, you know, that deal does a 13 IRR, you're still getting paid. You got acquisition fees up the yin yang, construction management fees. I love syndicated guys because you'll pay me more and everybody wins. Your investors are happy. They don't have as high of a return threshold as I do. Everybody wins. But it's a pain in the ass to go get all that money. You got uncertainty. You got some old guy over here, some weird rich guy over there. What if one guy drops out? You got to fill him up. You've all been there, right? Raise your hands if you've been there. If not everybody is raising your hand, you're not a sponsor. You've never done a deal. Everybody's had that craziness. So by going to a fund, you have certainty of execution. Rob and I were looking at a deal together. And I think that our thesis was just wrong and we discovered it during diligence. But had our thesis been right, Rob calls me on the phone and we have the ability. And I say, Rob, let's bum rush this thing. Tell him I'll give him $1 million deposit, but he's got to drop the price by $1 million. He's on the ropes. We'll wire it tomorrow. That's pretty good. Or what if Rob's going to make an offer on something and they say, well, who's your equity? And you go, well, you know, I'm syndicated. I've done a bunch of stuff and it's great. Or he says, I'll put you on the phone with Auerbach Funds or with Artemis. And, you know, they own the color blue. And if you'd like to buy that shade, they'll close tomorrow. Well, you're going to do more deals. And what funds do is funds do pay fees. Not going to pay your egregious like 2% on total cost acquisition fee that you're getting from sponsors, but we do pay fees. And the promotes aren't going to be as high, but the fees, I would say, Rob, would you agree that the fees are less of a haircut than the promote with a fund?
That's right.
Yeah. Like construction management fees, a construction management fee, we're not going to let you rape us and get an 8 or a 10, but you'll get a 5. And acquisition fee, you're going to get a point. We're not going to give you like go find the debt fee, wipe your ass fee, but you will get your fees and you will grow your business. So that's where funds come in. If you could get a fund by your side, it'll grow your business tremendously. I think that the goal as a sponsor is you want to be, you're all multifamily guys, a good person to want to be like is Reuven Odet at Blue Magma. Reuven's got, I don't know, 30,000 units. He's got investors that, you know, they're happy with an 8. They're a pain in the ass. So he does the, more of the streamlined deals where they'll get, you know, like a 9 IRR net. And then when he wants to do a high flyer that he needs to close fast, wants a sophisticated partner, he'll call us. But when you've got 30,000 units under management, that that heartbeat, that's anxiety. What's the market doing? What are interest rates doing? That's going to go away. Because every day, now you're running a factory because you are getting paid for a service. You've got a lot of units. Property management is a shitty business at first, but if you could scale it, now you could go to your kid's baseball game and know, listen, market goes up and down. I've got a lot of scale. No matter what happens for the next 8 years, I could bank this much money. So an institution will help you get there. By having more assets, which an institution will help you buy, you charge your regionals to the asset. They are a good measure to build your business. And what happens is a lot of people never go back to syndicating again. Is that a good enough overview, Rob? While I catch my breath?
Pretty good. I mean, yeah, we can just take questions right now. If anyone wants to jump in, kind of steer it.
I was going to say this session... The session before this, I'm the lone lawyer, and there's all sponsors here, and I represent both funds like you and represent Lone Star, but also sponsors. And in the closed session without you, we talked about all the things that the funds are too difficult on in their documents. So tell us how forgiving and understanding you are to a sponsor in your documentation.
Right. So one, it's hard on the Zoom, and two, I don't have my hearing aid. So Rob, I heard documents and
No,
it's not your fault.
The punchline is for the one lawyer who's talking to the sponsors, who does both work for funds like you in a joint venture and for sponsors, we went through a whole bunch of sponsor tricks in joint venture documents. But tell us how understanding and forgiving you are in that negotiation.
That's very fair. So it depends on the sponsor. So let's it's a rainbow. Certain things how many people in this room, let me just get a gauge of the audience here, have over 100 million in assets they're managing right now? Raise your hands. 50, besides you, Rob. 50, raise your hand. 25. Okay. All right. So I'm going to put it pretty simply to you.
Oh, yeah. We've got a couple hundreds.
Okay. 100. If you're under 100, you're doing anything the equity wants. The equity will control everything. All major decisions, when to sell, they'll be able to unilaterally fire you, except you keep your promote. You'll lose your, you could be removed as manager, but you'll keep your promote. What they can't do is take your promote. There'll be benchmarks, but you are at the mercy of the equity. And I think that you're going to see that often. However, the equity, as long as it's a reasonable shop, and there's not many of us that do that many small deals, but those that do, we're fair. All of us are fair. It's in our interest for it to work. You're going to really get, I wouldn't say bent over the barrel. You're working for the equity. The equity is going to be the boss. It's going to be a very different relationship. Whereas the better job you do, the more that boss will trust you, but you become an extension of that equity to a degree. When you're at that phase, even 100 to 200 million, you're really an extension of institutional equity. It will make you better though. Institutional equity has processes in place and they're gonna ask you to do all of that. And those will be in the docs, but major decisions, we get them unilaterally. We just say we have them. And why legally, if you're two lawyers fighting in a room, you say, oh my gosh, major decisions. I've got to cede all major decisions. But from a practical point, I think you have to realize that the sponsor has more leverage than you think you do. And you could say, well, how in gosh name do I have leverage? There's one important reason you have leverage. Funds cannot afford to have a losing deal. In fact, funds cannot even afford to have a single digit deal. If you do a losing deal as a sponsor, okay, won't go on your track record. And let's say you want to raise for another deal. The first thing that your investors will look at is the value of that deal. If you could buy the Chrysler building for a dollar, you will get funded. A fund does not have that advantage. A fund basically says, listen, I'm really fucking smart. I got a team and they're really fucking smart. We're all so smart. And you got to give us your money that I could do whatever I want with it for the next 3 years, invest, and then I get to hold it for another 5 years. I can't afford a loser. I can't afford anything. So firing you is a disaster situation, is the last thing. Something has to be really bad for the fund to fire you. And you should always keep it in your mind that while your docs won't be favorable, the fund has more at stake than you do. And it's a very important thing in your head when you're seeding some of these things like, oh, they're gonna have control. That fund wants the highest IRR, the highest multiple. They are so aligned with you, it's insane. Nobody is rooting for you to do a good job more than a fund manager. Now, you might have some crazy pref equity guy that wants to get control, but on straight equity, that's pari passu until the pref, they're rooting for you. So other terms, a lot of times, and this is one to be very, this is a trick for fund managers. Fund managers will say, fairly so, you induced me with a budget to coming into this deal. You said it's going to do X, Y, Z. And I say, okay. If you're 20% under that budget, which is a reasonable thing, you lose your promote, or I can make you lose your promote. You're fired. A lot of guys put something like that in. It's a defense mechanism. Where you need to be careful, and you lose your promote. Where you need to be careful of that is that first year. You might want to extend that because let's say your construction gets delayed and you got half the units down. 2 months delay, you're dead. You'll never make it. You will never make it. So you have to watch out for that. You have to say, if there's construction delays that are not material, that's one loophole. But again, the fund is not looking to fire you. And that's very important that your lawyer is a deal lawyer and not a And, you know, someone like we were just talking to there who does both sides is a great lawyer to have. Great lawyers are guys that represent both. You always want that because they'll say to you, listen, man, I know these fun guys. This seems really hard, but they're really not trying to fuck you. And then he could say on the fun side, he also says, listen, I do a lot of fun work. I do a lot of sponsor work. These guys, they're young, but they're okay. You'll see. They're going to play ball. Just don't break their balls too much. Hold on one second, guys.
Remember?
Did you buy that?
No. We'll come back to it's me and my reputation, which I agree. It's Ken. So. But also.
Does that answer the question?
It does.
That's a good one.
We've been trying to tease out that dynamic. And the one thing I say, again, on the capital side, I'm with you. And if I'm protecting sponsors, you know, that's great. You're great. Great reputation. You work with me. Can you sell your position? And the answer is probably yes. And you're not telling me I can't. And then I say, oh, guys, just realize it might not be great. You know,
Peter, can you sell your position in the deal?
What's that?
Can you sell your position?
So you
sold your equity.
Funds sell their equity. Not really. They can. They usually don't. Here are some instances where you will do that. Sponsor wants to stay in the deal. You're capped out. And the sponsor says, listen, I got a multifamily. You know, syndicators are paying like crazy for this. They want a lower return at this point. They're going to pay us more than we can get on the market because we don't have to pay the broker fee. We're not going to have to pay transfer tax. We could probably save on our taxes with the county because it's an equity transfer. Sometimes that works, depends on where you're at. That's usually when you'll see a sale, but it's not really like you're selling your equity and running away. It's almost, at least in our experience, the only time we've done it is when I'll sit down with the Rob and you'll say, hey, Pete, there's such demand for this stuff. My investors just want a low rate. Why don't we buy your equity out and we'll subtract the promote. I'll get it from my guys. I'll sign a release. But as far as we do and more of the sophisticated shops, it's just a vehicle for a sale. And it only happens really when either you hate the sponsor and the sponsor hates you, but the sponsor's done nothing wrong. That's more rare than you love the sponsor and you work together to a common goal where everybody wins.
Yep. So you talked about cost of capital and you admitted yours is higher. Funds are generally higher, not all funds, but so something that you may not have made as clear, which I'll just quickly mention, is you operate through a double promote structure. And
correct.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to touch on that, but basically, so everyone understands, he partners with a sponsor. The sponsor has his fees and his or her promote, and then he receives that net return, and then his LPs of the fund get charged a fee and promote from Peter, and so then his fund LPs end up paying a promote at the deal level, at the fund level, and then they get their money. So that's why Peter needs a higher return in order for him to want to do a deal. And so I want you to talk about, you know, what is your cost of capital? What are the returns that you're seeking? And how the heck are you out there finding deals that meet that criteria?
Okay. So we've been really lucky. We're up to 37 transactions now in these funds, basically mostly in Fund 1 and 2. Fund 3's got 5 of them so far. 20 over a 10. Is typically what a fund charges, you know, between 6 and 10. However, we will do promotes anywhere with the bottom tier being 10, sometimes 12. And most funds will, especially as you get bigger and bigger, we'll put that in. We'll also put equity multiples that you have to achieve. If you're getting money from a fund, it's a real deal. Like you are, it's big boy time now, or big girl time. I don't know how many women are in the audience, but it's adult time. So funds depends. The average weighted average fund return is a 7. We target net to investors a 16. I got to be hitting low 30s, high 20s on a gross deal basis. Fortunately, we have been doing that. Our weighted average gross return on deals is about a 39. We had some real big ones that, you know, just were crazy, and everything we bought this year, the five deals we bought this past year. Well, I mean, you wouldn't believe me if I told you the IRRs, but you can imagine what we were paying. I mean, to give you perspective, we bagged 220 units in College Park in Atlanta at 87 grand a door last year. We're putting it out to market for 140. I think I put $4,000 into it. So that's like, I don't know, 150 IRR. So those sort of help bring that average up. What's more important though is we, for our investors, they really want the pref. They want that 10. Anything over that, we're splitting. You guys are splitting, we're splitting into it. So the gross to net might be substantial, but we still show it. And the reason why we show it and we say, listen, the gross on the deals is 35, you have a 19, is because what it says to them is you have 25% IRR padding over that pref. And the average Joe Schmo would love 10% a year going nonstop, especially foreign investors, institutions. They simply can't get it. Good.
And so how did you find that College Park deal? How you know, you found that Shreveport deal you're telling me about. So, and also, so, and you're not necessarily, so you're kind of unique because you actually do find deals and then sometimes play matchmaker with sponsors. But for the vast majority of funds, they're just getting inbound deal flow from sponsors. So they have sponsored deal flow. You're a little bit unique. You actually have direct deal flow in addition to sponsored deal flow. So talk about how you've developed this deal flow and, you know, we'll take it from there.
The goal of a good fund manager is to get the first call, always. That you want to be, every sponsor's got a deal that is a killer deal. Sadly, though, the killer deals are quick, right? I mean, by show of hands, who thinks that those killer deals have to move fast? Really fast. You want to go fuck around and syndicate that? Or you're going to call me? You need a deposit. You got $1 million in cash? You call me. And you have to build a reputation of doing it. You have to have a lot of references. You have to be really easy to work with. So that's number one, is you got to get the first call. Number two is you have to be accretive. Is, you know, Rob and I look at a deal together. I'll be like, Rob, I modeled this out with my guys too. What do you think? We could work on this together where it's collaborative and it's fun. That if you're a good fund manager, you say, Rob, these are my terms. Why don't we just bitch and moan about these before we look at a deal together? This is the benefit of them. And being honest and transparent, saying, listen, if you can syndicate this, you are going to do better than you are doing with me. That's just true. Do you want to do that your whole life? Do you want to make a little money? Because I will tell you that all the big sponsors get all institutional equity all day, every day. You get your business going. And that way, instead of worrying about the ticker every day, you're just cashing that management check, cashing that asset management fee, whatever it be. That's a sustainable business. That's when you can go coach the little league game and not be worrying about the world falling apart from under you. So collaboration is very important. The next thing is that if you're going to have major decisions, I think that what I've seen successfully is that the head guys are involved, that you get on the phone yourself. Rob, did you ever deal with any of my guys except for over email? They were in the room, but did you ever call them for a major decision? Never. You and I just spoke, whether it be playing chess on the phones or not, but you've got to be around. They have to know that the person that is going to have major decisions is going to make the right decision. If you want a lot of money and I say that somebody from Sri Lanka or Antarctica or you know, somebody that's living in a hut somewhere has got $1 billion and they're going to make major decisions, but you got to call them and you got to get them in the hut. And then they don't know about real estate. You got to describe to them what this IRR is, but this guy's got major decisions on you and you got to move. Well, how are you going to find them in a yurt? What you want to do is you want to know that when you call your equity, be like, wow, this guy not only can make the major decision, but he's done this 100 times. He's actually going to have an insight into this. He's going to help. He's going to make a major decision that's on my behalf. That's really important to get the winning deals, because we've all had that winning deal, that no-brainer deal, that 87 grand the door deal, where it's like, listen, there is so much money. I'm going to be in the top of the promote here. It doesn't matter that my promote started lower. This thing's 100 IRR. Who cares? I'm getting all the money anyway. I need certainty. I think the last thing that has helped us, second to last is repeat deals. We do like six deals with every sponsor. These are my friends. I think that anybody says it's not personal, it's just business, can go fuck themselves. It's very personal. And I think that you should all, I know how hard it is to be a sponsor firsthand. I cut my teeth on the side doing stuff in the Bronx that you have no idea what this stuff was like. And it's very personal. These are your babies. You guys care deeply about this. You're losing sleep over this. You're waiting for that acquisition fee because you need that acquisition fee, especially when you're starting out. That's just going to keep the lights on. You will do anything. And then you have some prick who's been in the business for 3 years, standing on the shoulders of his equity, bossing you around. That's not the owner of the fund, and saying, well, it's just business. I really beat the guy up. The goal is not to beat each other up. So I think that having that attitude and delivering messages, being like, listen, we're in this together. You can't do it this way. You got to do it this way. And I'll tell you why, and why this is going to help you by me explaining this to you. People will want to do business with you more because it's very personal. All of our sponsors I've been doing business with for a long time. These are my dearest friends. I mean, who the heck else do you spend this much time with? You're like going to war together. You're in freaking cars driving in the middle of nowhere. You're talking every day. Like, who else do you collaborate with except for when you were in Little League together or in a fraternity, like trying to find a way to buy beer cheap? I mean, you just don't have that kind of collaboration in your life. So I would be very wary of anybody that says it's only business. Fuck you. It's not only business. It's very personal. I take it personally. I think you guys should take it personally. I think that attitude has served us very well. I mean, I love my people I do business with. I mean, they know my kids. Like, we have nicknames. It's very important. They've eaten at my house. So that served us very well. And I think that the last part that gets you the deals is, remember, the sponsor is doing you a favor. You guys are doing us the favor. The equity should always thank you. Thank you for trusting me with this information. Yeah, you got an NDA and anything, but let's be honest. The equity wanted to take a deal. They typically don't. You never do business again. Like, we never worry, we'll sign anything. But they need to thank you. Thank you for putting together this report in the way that I could understand it. Thank you for accommodating our needs. People want to do business with people like that. And that's about it. Unless you have to be really smart. Let's just be honest. If the guy on the other phone is stupid, run. And you can tell in 30 seconds who's got a brain and who doesn't. This stuff, you're audibling, the play changes. You know, you're trying to get refrigerators out to Atlanta. You've got them in like a fucking Penske truck coming from Greensboro because it's the only Home Depot that still has the fridge. And then you're like, well, the granite slab isn't in. So I got to find these slabs with like some weird polyurethane that we put on. And it looks like granite, but we need supplies because we got 100 units down. You need someone that's smart and can understand, say, oh, that's a great idea. Why don't we do it this way? They don't have any doors. Why don't we do a barn door? Somebody that's smart has seen that before. Say, yeah, that's a good idea. We're going to use your crews or someone else. You don't have time to be explaining algebra when you're doing calculus. So got to pick someone smart. I like to think we're all those things, maybe not on the smart part, but in terms of character, that's something that we care deeply about. And that's it. And you have to be able to say no a lot. Rob, how many times have I told you no?
One word emails.
Yeah, one word emails. One word NFW. three letter emails. NFW. Yeah. A lot of NFW. But they have to keep coming back. Remember, you're getting like 15 deals a day. So that's how you get high returns. I mean, we're sitting on your guys' shoulders. You guys look at 100 deals, And then you pick one, and then I get to look at 100 of your deals. I got one in 10,000 I get to do.
Exactly.
But I can't get the returns you guys can do because I'm sitting behind the double promote.
And one of the things that very few people have this, and I think you and I mutually have this, is if I say a number, like a cap rate or an IRR, you believe it. And likewise, if you say that, I believe it, right? How many people, right? You hear a broker say five, like I just got a text message from my friend and he said, do you know anyone who has five cap buildings in Denver or Arizona? Doesn't exist. Like if you're asking that question, you don't know what a cap rate is. So I'm adding value to you because you can call me on the phone and you say, well, what cap rate is X and what's a good cap rate for Y?
We literally had this conversation on Thursday. I got an asset in Houston and I was like, Rob, it's my only asset left there. It's the Wild West. How much a door or even to say cap rates don't matter right now, it's going to trade per pound. And Rob said, listen, you know, in some areas there's a premium for down units. This ain't it. No one wants to deal with it right now. That exchange, we're usually a wealth of information, but the trust also. And I think that what funds offer is a less myopic view. And it's not because we're smarter, it's because of where we sit. We have less pressure on us and we see a lot more. And usually in order to be a fund manager, you have a lot more, at least the head guys, you know, there's people that work there. And if any of them are arrogant, they don't last long. I mean, I fired a guy pretty much on the spot because a broker called him. He's like, fucking brokers always call me. I was like, guy's just trying to feed his kids. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, we don't have that attitude here, but we do have a longer view. So right now in multifamily, I don't know what's going to happen. I think that inflation is higher than interest rates by a long shot. And so long as inflation, just to break it down, is higher than interest rates, well, then you're going to make money as long as you fix your debt. So let's say inflation is 4 and you could borrow at 3. You got 100 points of padding. I think inflation's a lot fucking higher than that, despite what the numbers say. I mean, I just bought, I have to cook tonight, and I went to the supermarket, something I don't often do, and shit, it's expensive. I think inflation's way up. So you can make the argument that way. On the flip side, you could say, well, SFR is going to make a dent. But we have that longer view. So when we see stuff that's modeled and saying, well, I'm going to exit at a 5, I'm like, listen, I just can't do that. We got to make sure we got to sensitize the crap out of this. So we also have a view into other sectors. We see a lot more and we get the straight dope a lot more. We're good sources of information because Rob gave me that information because we're friends. If someone asks me, I'll say, listen, I spoke to my really good friend, sponsor we're trying to do business with, and he says this. I trust him. He knows a lot of shit. That's what you know. That stuff goes around and it helps. Or the, do you know this guy? Fund managers will usually say, yeah, I do. If you're going into a market that you don't know, and Rob says, who do you know in Oakland? I'm going to give him a list of 100 names because these guys are calling on me. They're very good relationships to have, and you do a lot of deals. When you have fund managers, you get that first one done. You got a machine. The only reason Rob and I haven't done any more deals recently is just in terms of multifamily, the only thing I'm buying is if it's a really fucked up situation and we can steal it. I'm not buying, I've never bought a marketed deal. Like that one that we were looking at, we just, when we went to the college campus, we realized our thesis was off, but that was the deal. That's the stock. That was the right everything. We probably would have made money because who would have known that shit just went crazy even more.
So speaking of being smart, taking on risk and stuff like that, let's talk about risk, right? Not a lot of people, like I said before, aren't willing to do the things you're willing to do. And I don't think it's because you're dumb. It's the opposite, right? You have the smarts to see risk and identify, okay, I'm willing to take this risk, or I can find ways to mitigate it. So, you know, what are the good risks to take that you see today? What are the bad risks that you avoid? You know, what are the strategies that make sense? How are you stealing stuff?
Right. So great question. I'm gonna break this up. I'm gonna tell you what fund managers in general do, especially the larger funds. I'll tell you what we do because we're a little different. Just so you guys know, I cap our funds at 100 million because I can't get these returns unless they're small. I love writing $3 million checks, $5 million checks, $7 million. I wrote a $1 million check once. The IRR was like ridiculous. But he was a buddy and he needed the cash and actually put him in business. And we've since done five deals together. I've put him started as one of my dear friends. In fact, I have to go wear an Atlanta Falcons hat and post a video of it because I lost a bet when the Giants played them. So let's start with what most funds do and then what we do. So most funds, the guys that you'll be dealing with on the larger funds have a mandate and they are more beta players. Somebody up on high says, I like value add multifamily and you got to just find me shit in this city. I sat on an airplane. I don't know why this guy was flying commercial, but he was. He was one of the head guys like 5 years ago. I was going to Austin picking off stuff and he was on his way. This is 8 years ago, sorry. And he's on his way there and I'm like telling him about the deals. He's like, those are amazing. I wish I could do those deals. And I'm like, well, what are you buying? And this is like a really senior guy at Blackstone. He's like, anything. I'm like, what do you mean anything? He's like, anything. We're just buying anything. I'm like, so you're buying Austin, like the city? He's like, pretty much. We just have to get cash out. Those guys are a dream. They don't give a shit about risk because their risk that they're taking is market risk. The only risk that they care about is execution risk. So if you're going to do business with the bigger funds, you've got to be tight. I don't know if any of you guys, Rob probably won't give it to you, but if you look at Rob's financial models, I saw that when we first met, I was like, this guy has his shit together. Because the financial model speaks a lot about you when you're dealing with a large fund. Because remember, they're worried about execution risk. They want to know that you have a cohesive business plan, that you've thought of anything. What is the best way to demonstrate that you've thought of everything? The financial model. So first you have the inner workings of the model. You got hard codes, it's all fucked up. That means that you don't have your shit together. You can make any excuse you want. Well, I'm not paid the financial model, but you are paid that anything you need to do is done with excellence. And that's a very important thing. So it shows that you're thought through. It needs to be branded because if you can't brand your own fucking model to get millions of dollars from me, how do I know that all the signs are going to have the same font, that you're not going to have a sans serif here, a serif here, that on day one, nothing's going to work. The next thing is specifics. There is, every contractor will give you bids. If we look there and you're like, well, 10 grand a unit, that's what we're going to renovate it for. How do you know? Do you have a breakdown? Do you have a single unit? Do you have a bid from a GC? Now, granted, on a fast deal, if Rob and I were doing it together, we know what these things cost in general and we got to move. But first time, there should be backup. I should be able to change the backup. It should link because, again, what does it show? A continuity of thought. So that gets back to what is the risk that the bigger funds are worried about? Execution risk. If your deal is good and you know it's a good deal and a bad deal, and they've made a decision to, quote, buy Austin, they are looking to make sure you can execute. Your marketing materials, they're not going to even read them. They're going to look at them. Go hire a graphic designer. If you want to email me, I'll give you the guy that does it as long as Rob tells me because I don't want you to compete with him. But it has to look swanky. Because I need to know that you have your shit together because I'm worried about execution risk if I'm Blackstone. What do? Well, we buy deals that you couldn't fuck them up if you tried. We only buy slam dunk winners. So when you ask me risk, I guess execution risk, but they are such winners. And $87,000 for 2 and 3 bedroom 12 and 1500. It's Avery Townhomes. If you want to look at it, I bought it for 87 a door. If you want to buy it, it's going on the market for 140 a door. I welcome you. I'm going to make a lot of money, but who cares? You could too. Do you think I was really caring about execution risk there? How do you screw that up right now? You couldn't. By the time we actually closed, I'm having a weird echo. By the time we actually closed on the deal, it was appraised for like 115. So that's the kind of deals we do are no-brainer deals where if you're buying something, I want to make sure, Rob, I have a weird echo.
Yeah, why? It, Oh, hold on. No, everything's fine on my end.
I clearly haven't moved.
Anything changed on on your mic?
No. There you okay. go.
Go ahead.
Testing. Good.
Well, I just put myself on mute.
Well, no, you're good now.
Okay.
So we do no-brainer deals. How do we get no-brainer deals? We do them small. So I don't think that I'm the right guy to really be. There's certain things I can answer for you, certain things I can't. I'm not the right guy to ask what most funds do, because we do it. You know, there's an Israeli army expression that says, if there's a doubt, then there's no doubt. Like, get out of there. So when we model deals, I mean, Rob, what were we modeling on that deal? Like 8.5 cap exits on multifamily? Like, that was how crazy the numbers are on the deals that we do. But selling ourselves a little is we love first-time sponsors. You're not going to get paid a lot with us, but we'll put you in business. And we want those no-brainer deals, which are usually the smaller deals. Right now, institutions are, you know, they're just picking up multifamily still. I think they're crazy, but multifamily is a little scary to get any of these things to pencil. You have to have really low caps. Yep. Interest rates, let's say people are like, well, they're not going to go up for 2 years, but let's say it's a year and a half from now and the Fed signals they're going to go up a point or 100 basis points in the next year. Well, they don't have to have gone up yet to affect your cap rate.
Yeah, the 10-year is going to move just based on market predictions.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Bridge is cheaper than Fannie right now.
Right. Be careful. For me, that's why I'm doing Freddie floaters. I like the floater with the exit optionality. Okay, so
we're also IRR based. You're not going to get you're never getting current cash flow from a fund. We are IRR.
Meaning you're not impressed by a deal if it's low IRR.
Oh, no, you're split. You're split.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're not going to get any of that shit where it's like, well, over a six, we're going to split 50% of the profits, even though, I mean, I saw one guy that, friend of mine, sent me a syndicated deal where this guy had the balls or the stupidity to send out his financial model, and he had like a 50 over a six and then a weird tier. But he had in the model that he was going to capitalize the distribution he was going to pay over the next year and take 50% of it. Like, holy shit. It's like a Ponzi scheme.
It's been happening.
What is the model waterfall between the sponsor and the fund?
Yeah. So what's your normal waterfall? Give us a range, some examples.
Yeah. I'll tell you the best you'll get, Rob. I offered it to Rob, 20 over a 10, 30 over a 15, IRR based. And that's our getting a 15. Depends. I mean, we're like with Angelo Gordon, 20 over a 12. And then you got to hit multiples. You know, sometimes you get another tier over a 30. With multiples involved, it depends. If you're somebody we think is really smart, you'll get the 20 and the 30. But these are going up and up and up and up. And the reason why is third-party property managers are getting better and better and better and better. They are. And AppFolio is really easy. What you guys provide is sourcing. You're much more valuable to me than you are to an Artemis or an Angelo Gordon. Much more so, because I need the sourcing. They have a lower cost of capital. They'll go direct and they'll just hire a property manager. If we bring you the deal, and I say, listen, I just don't have the bandwidth. There's six of us here. You're going to get squashed on the promote, but you get the fees. And why not? You get the track record. Yes. Getting hard to make money as a sponsor. I mean, if you can get it, if you want to grow your business, you come to guys like us. If you want to make a shitload of money fast and you can do it, syndicate.
I have a market question here. So you mentioned that you had an acquisition in College Park, Georgia. I'm actually 3 minutes from there. That's my backyard. So what are some of the demand drivers that you particularly look for when deciding to invest in the funds?
Great question. So let's start on a macro basis. That's actually a great question. Is how does it work? Like, how do you get from New York sitting in an attic in quarantine to Charlotte to College Park? I'll tell you how. Let's just say we had already owned like 2,500 units in Atlanta at that point. So we know Atlanta really, really well. But let's just say I didn't, right? So what you want to do is you want to be market focused, but not market reliant. So market focused means, listen, I'm going to still model this thing at a 6.5 exit or a 7 exit and see if it works. And if the market pops up, great. That's just Yahtzee, a bonus. Atlanta had a lot of good fundamentals in general. And that's how we started going in there. Little things that people don't even realize the importance of. They put them in the books. Airport. Airport is enormous. It's not just a little thing. It is enormous. I cannot even emphasize the gravity of an airport. Corporations, people. Atlanta's the number one airport in the United States. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, it's fucking insane. And people will bitch about Atlanta Airport, but considering how many flights go out of that place, it's pretty well run. There's a lot. It's just enormous. It's sprawling. So you have the airport. That's number one. Cheap housing. And cheap housing in terms of in New York, we all know it. Everybody pays, you know, 50% of their income to rent. In Atlanta, at the time when we started investing in there, my friend Darian, who's like, you know, guy in Atlanta hat, Falcons hat, he said it was 19. I mean, we looked it up and it was between 19 and 23%. It might not go to 50, but it ain't staying at 19. Then we saw a lot of flight of equity there. New York's impossible. Atlanta, you know, typically, and I'm not espousing blue or red, but red is typically easier to do business in. But Atlanta was blue and it was easy to do business in, which is like Yahtzee. A lot of people want the social of a democratic city. They like that vibe, that feel, but they want the laws of Republicans. And Atlanta sort of shifted a little bluer now, but you still have a really good balance of a very business-friendly place, but also attracts people because, you know, people like to move to places. And again, I'm not espousing politics. I'm just telling you where people move and where businesses move. So you had a really good balance there. So now you start and say, okay, find me shit in Atlanta. Let's start taking a look under the hood. So now College Park, this deal's a bad example because I bought it in the middle of COVID. I knew the guy and got it under contract for a long time. This is when everybody thought the world was coming to an end. That was kind of, just switch the camera so I could see who I'm looking at. Rob, just pan over. It's hard to see if I'm getting nuts. So like you and I both know $87,000 a door for Avery Townhomes is fucking insane. I mean, you got 1,200 and 1,500 square foot are the only two floor plans. I mean, we win. I mean, I could literally take a dump in the clubhouse and we'll still sell it for 140, 135. So I mean, literally, you're not going to screw that up. But that's sort of how we got there. So we look at that first. And then you say, okay, let's look and let's hope. This is kind of weird. You're rooting for good bricks, but shithole interiors. And that says, well, why would you want to buy a shithole? If you go into an asset and a sponsor says, well, we're going to raise rents, all this, and you walk in and it's mint. Well, that's no good. It's already nice. How are you going to raise rent? What you want to say is, listen, the guy across the street is getting $900 for a one bedroom. And right now in this piece of shit, we're getting $800. I'm going to come in with my guys. I know how to get labor here. And I pro forma $900, not $1,000, even though we're going to be better. I could believe that story, right? There's no clubhouse. There's no nothing. So Atlanta had a lot of that, a lot of that. Now, here's what people are starting to get a little shy of Atlanta right now. You got a rent issue like no other. It is ugly out there. I don't know what's happening, but delinquencies are insanity. It's the worst I've ever seen anywhere in the country. I don't know how this has happened. I think that there was just such an onslaught of evictions that you can't even process them. at this point. There is, and I think what's happening is there's a migration happening. There are the Kahl moving the Fulton, Fulton the recovery. So you have the offense and the defense coming off of the field. Most of the people who work in really the same places, but it's sort of like responsible versus irresponsible tenants are all sort of cross flooding. And in the middle of that, you're going to have a lot of skips because they don't want to get the eviction and people aren't even filing. They'll remove the eviction for a skip, just get out. But right now you're having a rent problem. It's going to be interesting to see what happens politically because it's a real hot potato politically because you don't want to kick people out of their homes, but then you have the other tenants complaining because typically the people that are under eviction aren't the people from the beginning of the pandemic where I was personally paying people's rent at the beginning of the pandemic. These were moms and the schools were closed and they really couldn't get by. Now, what you have is people that are taking advantage. Pisses me off, but I'll survive. Who it really pisses off is the other tenants. You got like a civil war going on within your asset. Because the guy's like, I'm going to work. This guy's not paying rent. Are you kidding me? So you're seeing a lot of conflict, a lot of stuff happening at the assets. Atlanta is somewhat becoming a hot potato right now. If, and my bet, I'm long Atlanta. My bet is it'll get cleared up. But I think there could be some opportunity in the short term. If you take the view that I do, is that people aren't just going to live rent-free forever. You're going to have the, you know, the switching of the guard. You're going to have the substitutions coming in and out. I think that that'll clear up. That's an opportunity. So we look for things like that. I may be right. I may be wrong. I'm not going to go place a bet until I can find something cheap. But you might be able to find somebody that's like, listen, I ran out of money because all of these tenants that are on eviction, the units are in bad shape. I did not pro forma this. I'm out of CapEx dollars. Bail me out. If you believe like I believe that this will get fixed, this is a short-term thing, that the city of Atlanta is not going to be, you know, Bernie Sanders rent-free forever, that's an opportunity. So that's the kind of thing we do. We sit around, bullshit about with sponsors all the time. And most of these discussions, this discussion, for instance, happened with me and two of the sponsors, Darian Dunn and Michael Crow. We were just out to lunch and Darian's like, you know, I'm stealing his term, so I'll give him credit. And he's like, yeah, it's like, you know, offense and defense call the substitution. That's what we're seeing in our assets. Like, no shit. I'll buy that thesis.
What are the markets
that you
see?
I don't know. I could be crazy, but that's, but the one thing is we do not jump onto a thesis until we get the opportunity. We're not going to go in terms of risk taking. We're not going to go like balls to the wall on a thesis. You still got to steal it, but other institutions might.
You invest bottom up, never top down. You don't say, I like Austin, I'm going to buy Austin. You find a deal in Austin, then you figure out whether the market supports your thesis.
Both. So for instance, I love Tulsa and I love Oklahoma City. And I thought it was the right time to buy. And I said, who do we know in Tulsa and Oklahoma City? And 3 months later, we bought, we got lucky. You want to hear one that'll blow you away. We bought a 7-cap Class A fully occupied off an old guy. It's called the Klassen, C-L-A-S-S-E-N. That was lucky. Go Google it. You won't believe it. You can put it up on the screen. So we closed that last Thursday, but we said we like this area. Who are the best players in this area? And I went on a roadshow out there and I said, I need to meet all the best sponsors. And I was selling us.
This is a crazy deal.
Best deal of my life. In multifamily? Yup, 7-cap.
That's insane. 7-cap. So if you're willing, we'll do one more question.
Listen, I got a wife making me like wait on her hand and fist. I got the nanny there. You can ask me anything you want. I might sleep here.
Anyone? Yeah, other markets with similar delinquency issues as Atlanta, or maybe they're different delinquency, but delinquency nonetheless.
Yes. Yes. However, yes, there are. Atlanta is a perfect storm. And you have delinquency issues in Houston, but the government's amazing in Houston. it's like, I don't want this to ever end. Just pay the rent. It's like a voucher program without the vouchers. Atlanta was not geared up. Atlanta sort of, you know, everybody likes to play the political blame game without actually understanding the way things work, as if Atlanta wants to be in a situation where they're not handing out rent money. They're like, oh, just fuck everybody. We're not going to hand out rent money. It doesn't work like that. Atlanta was already short-staffed in general. Let's just like break it down to like big macro, that nuance. You had massive population growth, massive infrastructure growth. Everything's going crazy, and they were already short-staffed, right? Now you have a weak housing department that was short-staffed, well-intentioned people. Next, you have an influx of people that came in and raised rents. And when everybody's raising rents, theoretically, all the value-add players could have just made a syndicate or a cartel and said, we're going to raise rents, and now there's nowhere to go. That's a lot of the rent rising in Atlanta, is just everybody raised rents. It didn't happen on purpose, but you had a lot of migration. What happens when you raise rents? You have mobility. People move. I am a capitalist, and I believe that because of these rising rents, housing gets nicer. If you don't raise rents, then housing is shit and everybody lives in squalor. So that happens. A lot of migration. Atlanta was strict. It was stricter than all else in Georgia. No one could work for a while. You got all these issues that you have. COVID, their reaction to COVID was really weak. It was too oppressive, and it really hurt the little guy. That added into it. Now you have COVID at the government. They have the strongest precautions. You got people that are supposed to be handing out the money. Well, they're working from home. That shit doesn't work in the government. You can't do that with something so nuanced. Now you have the courts aren't open a certain amount of days. It's no one's fault. It's not like the people of Atlanta are worse than the people of New York City, right? I mean, we're all Americans, we're all human beings. But I think what happened was you just had a breakdown that wasn't anyone's fault. I think that will work its way through the system. It's just a funnel. You just had this huge mad dash of a perfect storm of events that really were no one's fault. Then they funneled in. And the thing you have to worry about Atlanta in the long term is crime. Crime is bad. Crime is really, really, really bad. Police department is in real, they can't recruit. You've had like five police chiefs. You have huge political problems there. You have a mayor that's not running again. That was popular. And when someone decides not to run again, that's, you know that there's issues. So very unpopular political climate. And until there's more law enforcement, I think that you're going to have issues there. Sadly, the people that get the most affected there are the tenants. That's who we hear it from is, and we've sold most of our stuff, but the tenants come to us and like, please, can you make more way stations here? Can you make the police, what can you do? Can you have police park there? My kid can't go outside. And we're trying. I mean, every landlord does. I'm sure you guys have experience with that. Is every landlord is making way stations for police to just stay at their property. We'll offer you free beer, just whatever you have to do. And it's being basically, that's bottom up from the tenants are begging for it. And it's, and we can hire private security, but it's not the same. And so, it's tough. That could be a cathartic moment in Atlanta because the crime is, you know, it's getting headlines now. I think there's somewhat of a pushback, but not enough. I think that the whole Buckhead, the mall in Buckhead, got a lot of publicity. And now you're seeing a lot of communities leaders saying, wait a minute, we really need the police. Let's find a way. We've had friction in the past. We got to make this work. I don't know. I think that's the wave is cascading over those efforts. Those efforts have to get a little higher. That's... If I'm long Atlanta, that's lingering in the back of my mind.
Getting better, a little bit. You know, one of the other, you speak of that perfect storm. One of the other issues in Atlanta is that with property management and the operations, it's getting a bad rep because property management is on the tab and, you know, tenants are complaining. And so it is, you know, making big news. And, you know, people are bailing out from a property management perspective.
I agree. I think that in Atlanta, you know, there's certain cities that you could third-party property manage as a fund, and I'll just do it direct. NFW in Atlanta. Atlanta, you got to have an owner-operator doing property management themselves. You know, Atlanta's a weird market. I think that, Rob, I'm going to introduce you to Darian, who's probably the best on-the-ground manager that I know. Different. He's not going to make it fancy like Reuven does. But what Darian was able to do is work with the community, reach out to the community, and create sort of a symbiotic relationship and say, listen, I'm raising rents, but this $100 or $200 that I'm raising, look what I'm doing for you. But I need your help too. We just personally, like Darian and I built a community garden. We didn't use fund money. We did it ourselves. Like, we're building this garden for the kids. If you see something, you got to say something, something like that. We'll make sure our property managers are respectful. A third party property manager is not going to do that stuff. They're going to have belligerent people on site. I think that the way to solve, what was your name, sir?
Tim.
Tim, I think the solution on the property management level is vertical integration. I think it's more important in Atlanta. Like, Rob, if you want to buy in Atlanta, you got to bring your own guys. Whereas Houston, you're buying like class B, class B minus. You could third party that all day. Atlanta.
And there's good managers in Houston. I don't know about Atlanta. I'm sure there's some good managers there.
There's some good ones, but they're not. It depends what you're doing. Workforce housing.
But like OKC, Tulsa, there's no good managers. So
vertically integrated. Like, yeah. There's no third-party managers. But if you buy the Klassen, for instance, we bought it with a sponsor. You could, Graystar will manage that for you all day. Workforce housing is tough, man. Atlanta, especially vertical integration. What we've had success with is not being the bad guy, just working with the community. Remember, you're coming in an area like that and from out of state, and you're acting like, you know, I own this now, I'm just going to raise everybody's rent. You're going to have pushback to that, especially when it's happening everywhere.
Any other questions?
Rob, I think I'll put you in touch with Darian. Darian did a masterful job where we had such a win-win situation, and we did it with our single family homes. He's probably my favorite guy in Atlanta.
Nice. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you jumping on with us.
Yeah.
As always, very insightful.
Sorry for the cursing. It's Saturday. See ya.
All right. Go take care of your wife.
Oh, yeah. See ya.
Bye.